Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Building 72. We are so excited to have today joining us one of our favorite alumna from our undergrad program, Ross Marabella. And he was a fixture in our spaces in our building for several years. And then he's gone on to do such amazing stuff. So, and of course we're here with Adam. Do you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody.
Ross, will you introduce yourself to Building 72?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. First, I'd say that I'm really excited to, you know, kind of share a little bit of my story and my experiences. So I was in the undergraduate program, almost maybe a bit of an overachiever. I did the 2013 and 2014 capstone. So we worked on a game called Avatar Trials for XBLIG. That's the Xbox Live Indie Games section of the Xbox 360. And then when I came back my senior year and sort of my last year with the program, I was working on a game called Origami Kami, which we released on the PS Vita. When I was in the program, I wore a lot of hats. So I think that's very common for a lot of the people in our industry and in this program, but I was doing design. I was doing probably a little bit of QA testing, a bit of whatever was sort of needed. But primarily, my passion and sort of my background ended up being production and, you know, working and communicating and leading teams and working on the schedules and all that other stuff. So I graduated in 2014. I ended up moving to Austin, Texas, to be in Warren Spector's. He had sort of this 1 year production and game leadership program. So we were in small groups again. It was kind of like a Texas EAE, so to speak. You had a lot of people from very different backgrounds working on games, and you know, you're trying to learn as much about the process. And then when I graduated in 2015, I looked all over the place and I started work and I got a job at 2K Games, which is in the Bay Area. So I moved to Northern California and was working on just a number of different titles and projects with them for about 5 years. So everything from BioShock to Civ 6 to NBA Playgrounds and PGA Tour, 2K, and all kinds of other.
No biggie, just like BioShock and those things. Six. You know, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
I very, very lucky. I don't know. I had a really interesting path, and yeah, got to work on really a lot of cool franchises and have a lot of interesting experiences there. And then in sort of the last 2-3 months, I took on a role as publishing producer at Humble. So Humble Games is like the publishing label of Humble Bundle, which you may know, they're a you know, popular place to get your video games online. And there's a certain amount of that work that all goes to charity and is you know, trying to pay it forward more in our industry. So really excited to be back in indie to a certain degree. And yeah, like working with a lot of small teams again and seeing some really creative projects.
That's so cool. It's just, I feel like, you know, lots of times people go into, you know, AAA and then realize that that's really a business. It's not like indies aren't a business, but you're so removed in a lot of ways from the actual product that it's fun to go back to working with tiny teams and being in a startup environment kind of. And I'm so excited that you're at Humble, though. I mean, I have given them a lot of money.
So I've got a question for you right out of the gate, Ross, based off of something that you said. Obviously, I want to talk about Humble and I want to talk about what it means to be a publishing producer and all of that. But as you were talking about your path, incidentally, I love that speaking of humbleness and like humility, you're like, yeah, you know, I guess I'm a bit of an overachiever. I did the capstone twice.
It was all luck.
I don't know if they, I feel like I was careful about even saying that, because it's like, there's a, you know, it's not sort of necessarily a possibility for everyone, nor yeah. was it maybe good for my overall health and well-being during the time. So I'm, you know, there could be a cautionary tale there in terms of why that's not a normal thing.
Well, now that we have our new degree, it's not really, doesn't work the same way, but consider, I mean, back then you were getting the film emphasis, right? So that was a very different time. So I think it made sense for you to have more time making games. So it was good. And you're right, not everybody should do that.
For sure. But you mentioned, as you were doing all that, I can't remember the exact wording that you used, but you said you discovered your, you didn't say passion, but like you discovered that production was your path. Could you talk about that a little bit? Because I know a lot of students will, the idea of production is a very abstract thing, just kind of by nature of it being what it is. And some people will question me, and I know they talk about, or they ask Corinne and things like that. They'll say, how do I know if I am a producer? Like, what does that mean to me? How do I have that aha moment? So if you have, could you talk about yours a little bit? Cause it sounds like it was something that was pretty clear cut to you of like, this is what I need to do. So.
Yeah. I think there are some questions and things, I guess I ask myself, which may be more helpful, cause everyone's path is going to be very different. I don't know if there's particularly one thing that you might be able to say, I did this and this is 100% right for me, just because you may be, you know, in the midst of being a you know, fantastic level designer, and then you've kind of maybe got some experience scripting or making more art, and like all of a sudden you're just pulled into a totally different direction. But yeah, I guess some part of that was a lot of trial and error. And I think that leaning into the failures, clearly a thing that's emphasized in the undergraduate and graduate program. And so you're thinking of the way that you're applying yourself on these projects. And I really didn't, it didn't sort of connect, and it didn't like work out as well when I was doing a lot of these other roles. I didn't find both the ability, and I also, you know, you need to be investing in those things. But when I could, you know, when I could go and say, I'd like to be more organized, I like to keep track of the tasks and maybe the number of issues that I see, or maybe when I'm trying to work out some sort of like interpersonal conflicts, like those are sometimes more of the things where if you're kind of even stepping into those sort of different challenges and saying like, I don't know if I had the perfect way of doing this, but I was organized and I was able to work with a different with different people, and I was able to keep progress moving. Like you sort of like just sort of maintain, keep the train moving, keep people motivated and productive and honest, and you just sort of find yourself, at least in my experience, saying, well, if I could get a little bit of an inch here while you know, supporting the people around me, then that was going to be way more valuable than anything that I could do with my hands for the actual game. Like I'll take all the busy work off your plate. I'll do all the silly sort of just different things that the project requires, as long as you can continue to be super creative and super, just involved and invested in this thing that we're working on.
I love that answer. I love that answer because it's so you, for one thing. And, you know, I always say that, I always say, if somebody asks me that question, do you want to be a producer? And I'm like, well, how do you feel about spreadsheets? And how do you feel about people? And if you don't say, I like both, then production's probably not the right place.
Oh, just thinking, it's like you kind of have to have both, because when one time it's like you'll just be like, I am, if you're not doing enough to keep track of things and keep schedules, then you know you're not as contributing as much. You're just sort of like present in there. And if you're just in the spreadsheets, if you're just in the schedules or budgets or whatever, then you're, you know, then the team is, it's very separated. You're just kind of a project manager or scrum master. And some teams just need that because they're so self-sufficient. But I'd like to think producers have a little bit of both. They have that sort of elusive quality to hopefully be able to kind of have a foot in each of those different areas of the development.
Absolutely. That makes sense. I was going to say, it was funny, Corinne, you said, I love that answer. That was verbatim going to be exactly my response. because I've always told people, producers make it possible so that everybody else can do their job. And I love the way that you said, like, let me take care of like the nitty gritty so that you can continue to be creative. And not that there's not a terribly creative aspect to production. But the way you phrased that was just like, there that should be a textbook definition. We should write a book. And that should be the textbook definition of production, because that's exactly everything I've ever experienced.
I certainly have. I mean, that's certainly what we try to talk about in school, but you know, it's in practice, it's sometimes it can feel like I'm doing all the dirty work. And, the way I've always looked at it is everybody licks the envelopes, you know, we don't even lick envelopes anymore. And, you know, but
that's a lovely imagery, email. Everybody yeah. licking envelopes.
It's an old way of thinking about it, but you know, it's like, we all do all the things sometimes, but when you can let people, get better and do more, that's, I think that's very satisfying as a, you know, as a former producer, although I produced EAE.
Totally.
Well, I am so happy that all of the things that you've done, what can you tell us, like, can you tell us what your favorite project has ever been, like that in your professional, I won't make you say choose between your two babies of Origami Mommy or Avatar Trials.
Avatar Trials is probably, it's at least one of my most dear. I think there's probably something to say. It's, you know, a project that you're very, very close to the first time, and you're going through all those different stages. And, you know, and I guess that sort of was important to, like, you know, we actually were like doing the whole, you know, we'll start our own business. We'll take care of this. We're publishing. And so much of that extra motivation on my end was to specifically say, like, I want to be better than last year's games, or I still enjoy playing this. I still like you end up asking all these different questions. You go like, what are the things that we can do to make this see a pretty wide audience? Like, I guess a little bit of my own foreshadowing for publishing was just that some questions about production and about both, like, you know, what we were doing and what this team could do. Like, I guess I was starting to see those very early questions. And so, you know, while we were definitely really focused on getting the game all the way through that publishing process and out, like, I guess I just thought there was something that I just had a lot of ownership of and a lot of like attention. So it's there. It's like, okay, like we're going to make sure that this is, you know, what could be like the best selling game of, yeah, I don't even know. It was like September, or it was just the release date when it came out was like, we're the best selling game today. And then it's like, you know, the rest of the, everyone catches up to us. But it was like one day where, you know, everything sort of had played out, and we had seen people kind of, I don't know, at least check it out, or they were fine with paying a dollar and seeing what was going on. But, you know, past that, it's been projects and experiences that I can't really compare and tell, just because some things were really important because they never happened, you know, the games never came out, but it was so personal, and I was like so involved. And others were just like, I don't know, very AAA is very interesting, that there's just so many people who care and so many people who are excited and they see and they care, and you're responding to sort of that much reception and energy and community. And we're trying to release, we're trying to make great games, we're all trying to do our absolute best. And so those experiences are just harder because there's just a lot of different criteria and things I think I put into place with mainly just like working at 2K as far as the just range of projects I got to work on.
In your opinion, is there a difference between production at like a larger AAA studio and production at a smaller studio or an indie studio or a kind of more homegrown getup, as far as either what responsibilities producers have or how much involvement they have in the project? Is there a difference between the two? Is production infinitely scalable and so it's the same no matter where you go?
I think there's some differences. I mean, I'm always careful because there's not necessarily something that says one is like ease or amount of work or all these different challenges. Like if you are the producer on a very, very small team, like it could be maybe just two people or maybe five or something, you're still so closely knit to all those different decisions that are happening. Plus, to a certain extent, what happens next? Like, I think a lot of that generally does fall on the producer to be forward seeing so much of like the path. Whereas, I've worked with some AAA teams where a producer is so much more involved in very like specific features and modes and systems that were just so important. Like the multiplayer component of something could be totally involve one person because of a number of engineers and designers and people who respond to that. So, you know, I think there ends up being some chain of command when you just get to a certain size. So I guess it's sort of like you're kind of producing based on what the project needs, but in a lot of cases, it's just important for producers to be both aware of what's going on in their own sort of specific group and close-knit circle and then talking to the other producers to say, yeah, we're solving some similar problems, or I want to be able to line up with when you are expecting things to happen and come in.
I've heard people talk about like the bigger the company, the more you have to manage up. So your day-to-day job is you're managing the things that you all have to do. But then in a bigger company, there's this other layer of managing up, which takes a lot more time. So I think those bigger, they feel like bigger jobs, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably the other aspect of publishing, which is, you know, it's very specific to that, but you're just thinking of like a both executive group that is seeing potentially, you know, a dozen or more projects over the course of a month, or, you know, they're responding to somebody who doesn't necessarily look at the project the way maybe you or I or even the developer does. They're very interested in, you know, the return on investment, or they're interested in kind of like fiscal quarter revenue and just a bunch of different like questions that maybe the producer is still aware of, or maybe there's team members who are still thinking about that and you know, communicating up and communicating the risks and status. But you're dealing with people with very different obligations and responsibilities, so it's kind of have to speak in a different kind of manner with people like that.
Are you managing people now, or were you managing at 2K?
I had some people who I in some ways was like sort of responsible for, and a lot of the times I was like the to some degree the sort of studio or team I was working with, like, you know, their primary contact, their person that they reach out to for questions or problems too. So but in terms of like direct management, that's always been like, I don't know, different people I've mentored or different different kind of people.
Well, that changes your job, right? Like you know, it seems like to me that you're still very much involved in the games. So yeah. Which is probably like I'm assuming that makes you happier.
I mean, I think it depends. I really was, and I guess I look at that as like one of the most important experiences that I had was that, like, I brought in somebody, or there was somebody that was, like, brought into the publishing team that I was on in 2K, and, like, I was like, all right, well, let's figure all this out. Like, this is the way to ideally ramp you up and ask some of those questions. And, like, I guess if you think about those things, it's like, you know, you're going to apply yourself, you can be organized, you can do this and that. But if somebody gives you a little bit of a head start with either the people or the way things happen, or like the history, it's like, okay, now you're thinking about, like, how do I stand into this organization? How do I ask the right questions? And like, it's mostly just giving you some of the, like, okay, I'm, you know, building a network of people that I work with. I'm, you know, I'm making connections. I'm talking to people too. So I've just found that to be sort of helpful, because, you know, whether you, it doesn't even matter where you are in an organization. If you're kind of like, you know, somebody who can be easier to work with, or trying to make those different connections, like, I guess it makes people sort of respond to your sort of own interest in their like background and all their experience.
So you've mentioned organization a bit. You've talked about other things. Are you a Scrum guy? Are you a Gantt chart guy? What kind of specific, like, techniques or software do you use in your own personal, like, or do you prefer? Or conversely, are there things that you've used before or methodologies you've tried that you're not a big fan of, as far as either managing a project or keeping people on track? Kind of the more nitty gritty of the actual production job.
I feel like I have the, like, softest answer for that. Like, it just, it's not helpful at all. It's just to say that maybe it's whatever the team's interested in doing. Maybe it's based on, like, you know, I could have my own list of, like, yeah, I mean, I could have my own little, like, Trello board or Jira, or, you know, if they're really using Agile Scrum or Waterfall, like, the it doesn't matter. It's sort of like, I think I'm trying to be flexible against what I think the team needs. Although I do think it's, like, really, really important to, at least it's, you know, it's Agile, but it's to say that, like, being intentional with the way you talk about, like, what's happened, and talk about, like, what went wrong, and, like, sort of, like, try to at least incorporate, and maybe not necessarily even in a retrospective, but saying, like, you know, we can kind of try to learn from those things, and I can be accountable, because I want to like, make sure I'm not making the same mistakes again, or I want to make sure that people are comfortable because they see that somebody else on their team is trying to, I don't know, put forth something pretty straightforward, and that gives them sort of the, you know, ability to fail too, but also, like, yeah, be super accountable and go forward with it. So I think it matters on the team. I just try to make sure that I'm taking notes, and that I'm following up on time, and that I'm looking forward in the calendar, so when I know there's going to be a whole I don't know, doom and gloom from something all happening in the same week, it'll be like, well, I put it all here, so I know what I got to do.
All right, so I have to be a hard-hitting journalist right now. Feet to the fire, you have to choose one.
Oh my gosh.
Jira, Asana, or Trello?
Probably Jira. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I got used to that with 2K, though. It's like, I think I was like, I could see where this was like, I don't know. I think it's a pretty good piece of software, and you just can use it for a lot of different purposes. Like, it's going to end up working really well in a large AAA scale. You can do it for QA database management. You can do it. You can use it in the publishing checklist aspect. Like, it's, I don't know, it's just flexible. So
I remember when everybody was like, it's going to be hand soft. And I'm like, really?
That was
it was a very heavy piece of software.
I used Handsoft too, but we had something where we were even using a Handsoft for like our own sort of internal games library, So there was a time where it was like, oh, you want to check out like the Uncharted collection that just came out. And I was like the librarian, and like, I was even like, all right, well, let me go to Hands Off. And like, it was not intended for this. Like we were just like, I guess we got the license, so why not?
We tried to use it to run the program for a year, and it was a mess. Ooh. Like it was crazy. It was, and I think we just went back to Post-it notes because I think your answer is perfect though, Ross, because I think, you know, it's what does the team need? You know, what's the thing that everybody can use and get information in? Adam and I spent like 10 minutes helping one of our coworkers today figure out that she had been missing every single Slack message, which is what we live in Slack in EAE. So it's like, we all just need to be on the same page, and whatever page that is, it's fine.
and yeah. You know, we can add a sponsored by Jira message like right here in the video, and you know, they can toss us some money and recommend them all day long. That's totally fine.
So Ross, tell us what a publishing producer.
Yes.
A publishing producer is effectively somebody it could be your main point of contact at a publisher for a variety of different roles. You know, you have a publisher that gives you money on a milestone basis. They have a schedule for when the project needs release. They might be responsible for organizing the QA and localization and game ratings and working with a marketing team. And so that person is involved on all of the production and project management and organizational things that you need on the publishing side. So there really are a lot of similarities with like what a development producer does in terms of, you're tasked with keeping the game moving forward. You're really focused on the quality, you're focused on people working together, but a publishing producer may have like a 10,000 field view in order to answer questions about, I look at this project and then I want to make sure we're answering the right questions for the next project. Or I want to make sure that if there's something that's important for me to ask because I'm not in this project every day, that, you know, I can have that sort of really direct and really honest conversation with the development producer to get the right answer and it's got to be sort of a two-way street. It's got to be able to speak very clearly based on what the project needs and sort of where things are going.
I'm just glad that you and I, in meeting each other, have become such good friends, because one of the worst video game relationships I have ever had in my entire life was between me and a publishing producer. And I think the main difference between that is that all the like philosophy that you just talked about like being able to take views and being able to look forward and everything like that, this producer was lacking kind of every single thing that you've talked about, this producer did not have. So I was going to ask you the question about what makes a good producer versus what makes a bad producer. But if I may speak to that, a good producer does everything that Ross just talked about. A bad producer, we can have a whole other podcast about that.
Let's not talk about those people.
You're far too kind. I don't want to. I there's even things that I know I could do more of, and I think it's really important to recognize that, because in the sort of infancy of our industry, I could say like a much broader sort of statement, but the way that we're growing and changing and maturing is that so many development teams have had really terrible experiences with publishers. And I say that like broadly, because while there's clearly exceptions, while there's clearly people that are kind of, you know, beloved or very effective at what they do, there's a lot of concern. There's a lot of trepidation. There's like this, I think there's people who just see that you have somebody who you need, like the relationship isn't as potentially honest or sort of carefully considered. And so, you know, there's just horror stories abound where publisher X didn't pay the payment, or developer Y really tried to sneak something in on publisher Z. And it's to say that in most of those circumstances, like I do think that there's probably responsibility on kind of both of these different groups, but for the majority of the time, or to the horror of my realization being kind of more in publishing the last so many years, is that there's really more publishers that have made a bad impression. So it's just something to think about, because if your development studio or your developer, you should be thinking about the different questions that you want to ask any publisher that you're working with, because those things are going to become hugely important, not only when the rubber meets the road, there's a huge fire, you're 4 weeks behind, you're 3 months behind, unexpected costs comes up. Like there are all these things that, like, I think end up mattering, and you kind of need to evaluate the publisher and the people that you're going to work with, because that can potentially be so much of the reason that a project like is or isn't successful.
You know, I feel like, you know, right from the get-go, when I first started getting into the other side of games, everybody would talk about the suits versus the devs, you know, and I always felt like that was such a mistake, because these aren't art projects. I mean, you can make games as art, and we should have more of those. I'd love to play more of those, but I feel like for developers up and down the stack should understand that these are commercial products, and that they need to be paying attention to those other things. Maybe it's not their focus, but they really need to understand all the stuff on the other side. And so I've certainly heard a lot of, you know, smaller game companies talk about publishing as like the making a deal
I've
with the devil.
My soul.
And it's like, you know, that's not, I mean, you have to be cognizant of all of the product and the process. And I think lots of times, especially, you know, when you very first get into the game industry, you think you're just going to be an animator, or you're just going to be a coder, or you're just going to be, you know, do social media. But if you don't understand all of it, you can get caught up, you know? Yeah. So at least that's been my experience of seeing those things. And then, and it's really a shock sometimes when people are like, this is a business. It's a big business.
I was going to say, I'm sure Adam has something that's like, it just seems like a horror story that like just sort of like played out over a long process, or maybe just even like a partnership that was like, it just seems so promising, and then something happened and that changed, or, you know, there's so much that the character and the organization and those different things matter. And yeah, we're working on the most sophisticated creative field projects that you can see. And it's not to say that these things are like getting better and we're getting smarter, and the creative matters so much. It's like, I want to definitely say that the creative is what really drives all of that growth and a lot of like where the industry improves and matures, but you're also the subset of that is you have to be very careful of the business and of the relationships and the people that you're going to be working with, because it's definitely something you need to be very considerate of.
I think part of it too is that I just have a lot of people in my social circle that are writers, and you know, they don't understand that the thing that they're creating, I mean, that's even, you know, more personal, and like they're making novels and they don't want to think about it as a business. And I'm like, you know, in the long run, you're going to have to, if you want to have anybody read this besides your mom. So,
so a lot of students will ask questions about kind of the more concrete details of being a producer. And so this may be like a softball or a layup question, but it will be really good to hear it from somebody who's actually done it before. It's kind of a two-parter. One, students will often wonder, like, is being a producer actually an attainable thing? Like, even out of undergrad, like, can I actually just go and be a producer somewhere? And then the sub question to that is, if I can't get a video game production job, the skills that I learn as being a producer, where could I go from there? Or conversely, are there people who come into video game production from other fields or other with other skill sets that apply to being a producer?
It's a softball question, but it's maybe difficult to watch the like home run ball fly out of the park because it represents so much of what I see is like potentially like the most challenging aspect of this is that if you're really, really committed to breaking in production, I think can be one of the most challenging to do that, you know, based on a variety of different factors. But if you're really committed to doing that, I just do think it's both going to take a extremely large amount of work. Like you're really needing to both build up a work profile and background that says you've worked on a number of different projects, that you maybe have shipped so many games that you are Scrum certified, or you know, you can just think of all these things that really matter. And you need the network, because I think it's really even more difficult there to think about like the sort of entry level role where they're not just immediately reaching out to somebody that they may know or somebody that's really interested in production. Or this is the third part, is that a lot of production is that transition from design and QA and art, animation, engineering. It's to say it can come from any other thing. So you think about the challenge of getting into that role, and people who were in other disciplines are rolling to production for a variety of different factors. Like it's to say that maybe they're the most organized, talented, really great people management skills, and they've been doing like in our aspect, it could be even like video editing and making trailers and doing like marketing and a number of different roles. And so now they're a production coordinator, or they're an assistant producer, or they're doing all these different things. So, you know, you're fighting not only up but across with this very wide pool. So it's not impossible. I think to my own experience, I was really, really involved, and I was really, really committed to probably put myself out there as much as I possibly could when I was in the program. And then I still moved to do more training, so to speak, or to get more experience. And even then, which I think I can be very kind of blunt about that, it's like it still took sort of the right connection and network to get the entry level start with 2K as a contract production assistant. Like I think it's important for me to even recognize that, because while I was into quickly working on some really exciting projects, like I still had the uncertainty there. So if I were to say you're so committed to being in production, I think it may end up being in your best interest to either, yeah, you're going to continue to work on your own projects for years. I think there's just for a number of different projects until you feel like there's some transition to a different studio, or there are hundreds of different places that are doing outsourcing support or porting. And those people need smart, savvy people, which means you are still competing in a pool, but maybe a pool that's less crowded from the place that you most want to go. Or you're going to say, I'm going to do QA and I'm going to be doing like a number of different things, but I'm always going to be thinking about the way I can transition and like try to use my skill set and the things that I know to make that bridge and to make those connections and to like use things that sort of say, hey, like if you, it's just so common at this point that QA ends up being the first example, but I would have been in a better position to say that like that was probably as good an option when I was graduating as maybe anything else, because more education or more training necessarily doesn't guarantee anything. It's just uncertain, and you need to recognize that there's these different factors that all play into that. So long answer, sorry.
No, I love that answer. That was fantastic.
I want more of our students to hear that, actually, because I think that you're right. Production is harder, and we don't have a production track, you know? So I think eventually we will be off, you know, do something like that. But Adam, you don't know this, but Ross, I'm remembering correctly that you started Gamecraft, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Ross started the Gamecraft club at the awesome. U, so he could make more games to fill out his portfolio. So, it's still going strong, even in this crazy COVID time.
I mean, I think it almost died, to be completely honest with you, Corinna. It was like, I started up and then it was like, oh, well, you know, no one is showing up to this. And then we were still kind of having the meetings, and then there was more people who got involved. And I don't want to take all that credit anyway.
You know, that really people. Happens. Always, right, with clubs on campus, because you get somebody that's really passionate about it. But you know, it ebbs and flows, let's say that, but it's going. Yeah. From what I'm hearing,
I love that you bring it up, because so much of what I looked as like my mentality or my like fill in the rest of those experiences, like potentially you may not have the opportunity to do that if you're in the program and you're balancing that and work, but there may just be some parts of this where, you know, you are making a concerted effort for a weekend project that ends up being something that's like continual, and that you have trusted friends and developers that you want to work with. Or another part of this is like crossing over, and like I got involved with like the Utah or University of Utah like entrepreneurship group. So that was like some aspect of like, I don't know. It's like a part of me is just like my own mentality. And then it was like survival of like, I need this project not to burn out. And like, I would just find things based on my own sort of tenacious brain.
Yes.
Leaking. I don't know. I was just like very interested in like keeping to do that. Like, it would be like, yeah, I guess, you know, we've got the game jams. That's a really awesome opportunity. And there's a lot of remote action for that. There's people who are making that concerted effort to still network and try to connect those dots. So you don't have to do all of them right now, but you might want to think about the way that you like focus on a couple of those things, and like maybe they end up helping you just keep adding in. And I don't even think there's a guarantee, because you could say the really difficult thing is you can go and keep working, and you're still competing against a really just wide pool of people with the same ambitions and dreams.
I think that's good. I mean, I remember vividly you coming by my office and you're like, I'm going to do this other thing. Now I'm going to do this other thing. And it was like, okay, so you are going to do all the things. And you did all the things. And I remember seeing you once in the hallway, and you looked so tired, and you're like, I'm still having fun. I don't know if you remember saying that to me.
I don't think I remember the conversation. I might have just been floating sleeping down the hallways. Like, yeah. You saw a ghost of Ross. It was like a,
That was, I think, your second capstone semester. So yeah.
but I love that sentiment that you said there, because I try and tell this to students as often as I can. The people I've known in my life who have been the ones who are thriving in video games in the industry are always the people who are, like you said, you don't have to be doing everything, but everyone I know who has, like, they'd rank, you know, job satisfaction as a 10 and all those things, they're always the ones who are either trying to learn something new or trying to get involved in something new or trying to further their own craft. It's something that, and that's across disciplines. That's artists, that's programmers, that's everybody. And so I love that you said that sentiment, because that's something I've noticed through my own personal experience a ton, are the people who are always who, and that's often advice I give, like, if you want to come in and punch the clock, go get like a punch the clock job, because games is creative. Games are creative. Games industry is creative. It's something that's always continuing to grow, especially because we are still relatively new as an industry. So thank you for sharing that, because I feel very passionately about that. And I share a very similar view with you.
Yeah. And I was just going to make maybe one more point, because I definitely don't mean to just be like tooting my own horn with like the sort of just amount of sort of work and projects and these other things. Like that's really not for everyone. And I guess if there's some part of this that's like a, it's just to be kind of very honest or very like kind of clear with someone who may not be able to do all those things, and maybe eventually say that like this isn't exactly what they're going to do right now, but like if you think about where you might want to go years down the line or at a certain point, like this can still be something that you kind of incorporate into your own process. Like you step out of games, but you're still interested, you're still following things and maybe project managing and doing this and that, and like then it's like if there's an opportunity where you get back to it, then you're still sort of like, I understand a lot of these fundamentals. I worked with a team and I shipped something. I've done something that someone who's never maybe done a creative group exercise and sort of just a sort of overall process is going to be missing out on something that's like very, very fundamental to what it means. So like, it's just to say that the journey is never as like so straight down this straight and narrow. So,
well, I think that's such good advice, because I think that, you know, I say this all the time. It's like, look, your path is your path. And, you know, the game industry is big and wide, and we need people that have had very different experiences making games. And so that's because we're just going to get better games, which is my selfish desire, right? You know? So I 100% agree with you. Can I ask a really dumb question?
You ask any question here you want. I am very open book.
We are getting close to being out of time, but I want to ask, first of all, does Humble publish games?
Yes.
I guess I didn't realize that, because I guess maybe all the I just got a Humble message like 10 minutes ago in my inbox, and it's games I've seen, you know, but it's the bundle. So
yeah, this is kind of like maybe the exciting part of I'll try to be quick with this answer, but there's just something that, you know, they've found a lot of success with the bundle, and then they've spun up this group that is publishing. It's like, it is its own publishing label. So now it's saying, hey, working directly with this, like a team, and you're going to be, you know, we're going to be like a traditional publisher. And so that's only been the last couple years, and they've like seen a lot of success, and it's been really exciting to see the kind of games that they've worked on and what that's meant. And so, yeah, the team grew, and I'm kind of really lucky to be with that sort of production group that's working on even more games and more stuff that's going on. So
oh my gosh, me, I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, really, really excited.
And I'm done, because apparently I've never even paid any attention to that.
I didn't know much about it either, but I learned that you guys are publishing what's it called? Flynn, Son of Crimson. Mm-hmm. Which I remember being wowed by the Kickstarter, however, like 4 years ago or however long that was. And so now that they're working with Humble, that makes me really excited, because it's like, oh, sweet, this is actually going to be one of those projects that actually gets released, as opposed to the projects that you love and then they just disappear into the ether.
Yeah. There are some extremely talented people who work and are, they're just, they're seeing some of these projects at the very beginning, and they're saying like, this is where we want to go. And I think that's probably an interesting part of the industry. You just see that there's even more groups and people that are doing publishing and that are trying to be great partners for the developers and try to, you know, it's this, we already saw sort of a great rise in indie games in the last decade. Now it's saying like, building out even more to support those and give them a platform and give them just more opportunities. So really cool.
That's awesome.
I've got a final question for us, Corinne, because I know you're about to wrap it up. If you could go back, if you could time travel 6-7 years back and you could talk to recently graduating or just about to graduate Ross, what would you tell yourself? Like, dang, I really wish I would have known this beforehand, or dang, you better prepare yourself for X. Is there any advice or is there any input that you would want to give your future or your past self, having had all this experience that you have had in the interim?
I think the best piece of advice I would give, which goes back to a little of what I was saying, but it's just to trust this process and to understand how long this will take in so many different ways. Whether you just think of like the experience that led up to you graduating and the number of years that you needed to learn and to grow and to contribute to these projects, but then that amount of time it takes to get into the industry and to maybe just get into the sort of place that's really right for you, and to understand that, like, it's it almost feels wrong to say that there's just like no certainty here, and there's so many ways this like could have gone or could have gone wrong, and I think you kind of have to recognize that it's like a just keep working hard and trust it, and it's just sort of eventually down the line you will get there, but it's really not a certainty to any certain extent.
Breathe. Just breathe. Gosh, this just went by so fast, Ross. I can't believe it. It's so nice to see you. And we are going to do this podcast. So we have a crazy idea for another idea to have some of our alumni come back and play their old capstone or grad games and talk through it. So we will get you back again for sure.
We'll have to have you back twice.
I was going to say, I will have to do this. It'll be a serious flash the past to get the 360 back up. And like, yeah, I don't know. I'll be streaming it or something too, but that would be a trip. And I think it would be really fun. And also I can be very honest with where this project went right and wrong. And yeah, here's some kind of fun behind the scene things. Maybe that would be great.
Yep. That's why exactly what we want to do. And, you know, we're going to be publishing these so our students will get to hear from the real people.
It's almost like he's a producer and he could see where we were going with the project.
I'm so unsurprised by that. Oh, Ross, it was so good to see you.
I am so glad to be here, and it was nice to see you too. And if you guys need anything else for the program, or I guess if you're listening to this and want to reach out, you can just connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter, like Romar55, that's my Twitter handle. So I'm usually pretty receptive and try to get back to people, or maybe there'll be some day where there's some sort of crossover between the EAE world and what I'm doing now. I can't promise anything, but I definitely see some lines getting crossed.
Oh, I like that idea.
We'll bring it all together. Yeah. That would be cool.
Mr. Brains. Yes, yes, yes.
I like it a lot.
Well, thanks again.
All right.
Ross. Take care.